Good afternoon. And welcome. And welcome to everyone who is also joining us on the internet. We will go right into the book. And if you will, what we do is each person reads a paragraph. Nobody has succeeded in reading a paragraph without my interrupting. But once you have finished the paragraph, then pass the microphone on to the next person.
Starting with God's creation.
Yes.
God in his creations remain in surety, and therefore know that no miscreation exists. Truth cannot deal with errors that you want. I was a man who remembered spirit and its knowledge. As a man, I did not attempt to counteract error with knowledge, but to correct error from the bottom up.
Okay. It's like, in the beginning, or everything in its original, unaltered state, even at this moment, remains in surety. God and his creations, even at this moment, remain in surety, and therefore know that no miscreation exists as a fact, even though you all seem to be suffering from miscreation. Truth cannot deal with errors that you want. That's why your good can't be inflicted upon you by those of us who are awake. What you want, you will seem to have. And you will seem to have it until you no longer want it. But as long as you want to pay attention to and value your own perceptions of the kingdom of heaven, and as long as you want to call those perceptions a world and universe that started from a big bang and are purely physical, that is all you will see. It's very simple. I was a man who remembered spirit and its knowledge. And I'm going to play on the word remembered there. I was a man who remembered spirit, who rejoined spirit, you might say, and its knowledge. Well, we've been talking for some months now about remembering, rejoining. In other words, abandoning the fascination you have with your concepts about what the kingdom of heaven is, the willingness to abandon mutually agreed upon definitions that you have with each other about what everything is, and turning toward the altar. Giving your attention to that place of excellence in you. And without bringing to that place your best ideas, your best judgments, your best concepts, you allow yourself to be innocent, empty of preconceptions, with a desire to know of God, of that place of excellence in you, what truth is. That's how you rejoin. And we've also talked about a very important next part to that, which is being willing only to be present with your brother, your sister, your world from that place of excellence, free of your preconceptions, treasured ideas, beliefs, and so on. As a man, I did not attempt to counteract error with knowledge. In other words, you are not to go into that quiet place within you. You are not to turn toward the altar so that you may gather information of God and then turn your back on the altar again and go out and deal with the world with this wonderful new ammunition that you got from God that's going to help you independently cope with a separated sense of life more efficiently, more successfully. Do not attempt to counteract error with knowledge. As a man, I did not attempt to counteract error with knowledge, but to correct error from the bottom up. How many of you have read that sentence and thought, I wonder what that means? From the bottom up. To do it from the bottom up means to abandon the initial mistake, to undo the initial misstep. And the initial misstep was to turn your back on God and say, I'd rather do it myself. I'd rather decide what this means. I'd like to give this event an entirely different meaning from the one you're giving it, God. In other words, the initial misstep was that you decided to think for yourself. Perceive for yourself. And the way you undo error from the bottom up is to stop thinking for yourself. To stop valuing your independence. To stop insulating yourself from and against God. Continue. Not yet.
I demonstrated both the powerlessness of the body and the power of the mind.
Okay. I demonstrated both the powerlessness of the body. I want you to understand that that statement doesn't mean I demonstrated the non-existence of the body. I demonstrated the powerlessness of the body and the power of the mind. The body, that which all of you can see when you look at each other, that which all of you can see when you look at the orchid or the leaf or the table, is the visibility and tangibility of an idea held in the mind of God. Its substance is spirit, pure divine energy. Now, you turn your back on God and say, I'd rather see it myself. And this independent stance and the uneasy undercurrent or the uncomfortable undercurrent that accompanies the choice to see things in a way that is not natural to you, causes everything to be seen opposite to what it is. And so, instead of spirit, you see substance as matter, purely physical, a presence of something that has nothing to do with God. And so you see your body as material. You see it as an organism. Instead of an incredible symphony of that is actually musical, of the energy that is light. And not only that, you endow it with personality, character. My body is acting up today. My body is making a fuss today. My body is not my friend today, it's my enemy. You characterize it. And in the characterization, you attribute to it power that it does not have. Now, when you remember spirit, when you rejoin spirit, you discover and demonstrate the powerlessness of the body, because you come back into your right mind, into a true perspective, because the body never did have power. So in remembering spirit, I demonstrated both the powerlessness of the body and the power of the mind. The divinely mental nature of all existence. Because the simple fact is that you're not observing everything from your body, you're observing everything from your mind. And your body is just one of the infinitude of things that you experience in your mind. Your mind is the ground of your existence. It is the infinite place from which infinity is experienced. Continue.
By uniting my will with that of my Creator, I naturally remembered spirit and its real purpose.
Indeed. Turning to the altar, abandoning your will in favor of the Father's will, constitutes a uniting. A reuniting of that which never ever actually became separate. And you naturally will remember, when you do that, spirit, not matter, and its real purpose. And the real purpose of spirit is to give recognizability to the movement of mind that is God being all. Continue.
I cannot unite your will with God's for you, but I can erase all misperceptions from your mind if you will bring it under my guidance.
An insulting idea. Bring your mind under my guidance. Subject yourself to something other than your own authority, your own so-called authority, your own imagined authority. But even though it's only imagined, it is something you value so highly that it's insulting to you, to your ego sense of yourself. To have to abandon it as the central point from which you exist. It's hard enough to cooperate with your brother or your sister or your husband or your wife. But to have to do it in an ultimate sort of way, with someone who knows the truth more clearly than you, and therefore can appear to you to be superior to you, is not an easy thing to willingly embrace. And yet, since last June, that's all we've been talking about. And you know what? It constitutes a new way of being. It constitutes your making a fundamental shift when you're having good days. Fundamental shifts don't seem so important. When you're having really awful days and you're experiencing misery, a fundamental shift looks pretty good. At least reasonable. But what I keep bringing out, and what the Course has been bringing out, is that when you are not joined with the Father and you are looking at everything from an independent vantage point, you are suffering. You are suffering the loss of the peace that comes from the experience of being one with everything universally. You experience the loss of infinite communion with the brotherhood, with all the sons and daughters of God. Waking up will constitute the loss of loneliness. Oh, well, I can stand loneliness. You know, I mean, I do have a few friends. Whatever degree of loneliness I'm experiencing isn't bothering me too much. Well, then experience it. Truth cannot deal with errors that you want. I'm telling you that there's an alternative. And I'm telling you that it's an alternative worth reaching for. It's an alternative worth claiming because it's your birthright. I cannot unite your will with God's for you, but I can erase all misperceptions from your mind if you will bring it under my guidance. Aren't you glad it didn't say, under the guidance of all the awakened brotherhood? At least you only have to deal with me. And I won't penalize you if you argue with me. And if you delay, if you procrastinate, I will not chastise you, punish you. But as long as you continue to return to me and continue to inquire as to what truth is and continue to want to have any misperceptions you're suffering from erased, our brotherhood and camaraderie will accomplish that. The simple answer to the problem is break the isolation, abandon the independence. That is your whole problem. That is what creates what you call the human condition. And so do it with me. Or do it with your guide. Because we're all awake and we're all performing the same function. Continue.
Only your misperceptions stand in your way.
That's all. That's the only thing that stands in your way are your misperceptions. It's not that you're a bad person. It isn't that you've been so bad that you can't possibly be admitted back into the kingdom of heaven until you've been punished and have suffered enough. The only thing that stands in your way are your misperceptions. Now, you can't tell me that just because you're not little kids and that you're adults, that you have no curiosity to have a better perception of something, that you have no interest whatsoever in exploring and being open to surprises that benefit you. Benefit you? That curiosity is still there with you. Don't defend yourself against the surprise of discovering truth more clearly just because you'd rather be in charge yourself. Continue.
Without them, your choice is certain. Sane perception induces sane choosing.
Again, that sentence.
Sane perception induces sane choosing.
It's inevitable. It's natural. Sane perception, even though it's not knowing, even though it's not knowledge, induces sane choosing. Continue.
I cannot choose for you, but I can help you make your own right choice. Many are called, but few are chosen. Should be, all are called, but few choose to listen.
Yes, let's stop right there. All are called, but few choose to listen. Listen is such an important word, because listening breaks isolation, doesn't it? If you are listening, you're listening for something other than the idle chatter of your own mind and your own ego. It's an invitation to hear something other than yourself. Such a simple thing. None of this, at the bottom line, is difficult. You already know how to listen. You just aren't choosing to. That's all. Continue.
Therefore, they do not choose right. The chosen ones are merely those who choose right sooner. Right minds can do this now, and they will find rest unto their souls. God knows you only in peace, and this is your reality.
And this is your reality already. This is your reality. Okay. Yes, you may.
Miscreations, is that equal to misperception or mutually agreed upon concepts when it says miscreations?
Mm-hmm. Miscreation is like a nightmare. It's a fantasy.
Right. But I'm going to use this term for clarification. There's no basis in matter. In other words, I don't look around and see a miscreation in the physical form, do I? It's just all in my head. Is that, you see what I'm getting at?
When it comes to disease, you are seeing miscreation in physical form.
I see.
You are having a delusion. And others who see the same thing are those joined in a mutual delusion. A mutually agreed upon false definition.
Could we
the moment one realizes that the substance of all form is spirit and is therefore not physical and not governed by what have become called the laws of matter, physics. Instantaneous healing can occur because what you are seeing is not apparently held to a false structure of rules in your mind. And so what you had called physical form, when you have abandoned it to what it truly is, can shift form instantaneously, effortlessly, and comfortably, painlessly. Continue.
If I said a weapon of mass destruction could be a miscreation, is that going too far afield from the point that you're trying to make? Do you see what I'm getting at? Or would you say there is such a thing as a miscreation, it winds up being like a weapon of mass destruction or a, you know?
A weapon of mass destruction is nothing more than a form that everyone has mutually agreed upon to define as that which can bring great devastating harm to a great number of people or a great area of land. That's still nothing more than an imagination, an idea that is being held by everyone, and by holding it, everyone is confirming it and holding it in place. And I will tell you this, only those who are agreed to that definition will suffer from, the definition or the implementation of a weapon of mass destruction. You can have SARS, you can have whooping cough, you can have measles running through the community. But those who have not bought in to the definition and understand that they are just a moment. That they are not subject to such a belief structure, because they're subject to the laws of God, and who have even a rudimentary concept of their body as being the substance which is spirit rather than matter, they won't get SARS or whooping cough or measles. Even those who might seem to experience the first stages of any of those diseases, who catch it and recognize that they're buying into it and refuse to, will find those first few symptoms immediately or rapidly disappearing. You only suffer from the rules you have agreed upon and that you're committed to, because there is no matter at all. My point is that no matter how strong the belief is, matter has never been created and will never be created. It will always be spirit biased by a misperception that you're committed to, and you who are committed to it will be the only one experiencing that way, or the group of you who have mutually agreed to that definition and the rules of and structures of that definition. You see?
Yes. Another point of confusion for me is that last sentence where it says, God sees you only in peace. the confusion is, surely God could see our delusions, but is it that he doesn't choose to see us, or he doesn't recognize that as being our true nature? How is that so?
It's the fact that truth cannot deal with errors that you want. God cannot force you to see the truth when you want to see something else.
But he sees us kicking and screaming. Right?
God is not unaware that you are distressed, but he also knows that your distress is unreal and that your being is not threatened in any way by your thrilling and frightening imaginations.
Like a parent seeing his child be upset about the boogeyman.
Indeed. And like a father of a human child, God loves you with a nurturing love that is sufficient to convey to you the true state of peace that is yours. But if, like a child, you are so fascinated by the excitement of the terror that you're unwilling to let go of it, no matter how much comforting is provided, it won't be felt until you, like the child, withdraw your investment of energy in your reaction and your preoccupation with your imagination.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Yes.
I was trying to think this through. As you move around, you know things. I'm trying to give up my definitions. Thursday, on three different occasions, I almost stepped in front of a car, and I don't mean the same car, three times. So I was thinking, so what's up for me, even though I know that I and the car can be in the exact same spot, the same time, and both of us go our way, because we're both spirit.
Don't test that yet.
That's probably a good idea. But what's up now is trust, isn't it?
Until you can calmly sit at a counter or at a table and gently pass your hand through the table, don't step in front of a car.
Okay.
Don't test a natural capacity that you have under stress of that sort. Discover the capacity in the simpleness of a test, you might say, that you engage in your dining room, at your dining room table. Continue.
Okay, so bottom line, I guess what's up for me is, am I really totally willing, which is where I want to be, to give up my definitions? That the car can hurt me or that this or that? I mean, that's what's up, right?
No, how about what's up being just being more conscious?
And not daydream so much?
Being more present with where you are.
Okay.
Be present with the intersection. Be present with where the cars are in the parking lot so that you're not surprised from lack of attention that there's a car bearing down upon you. You don't have to go for the ultimate. Just be more conscious in every moment of your day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I would like to continue for right now.
Should I read the heading? Five, beyond perception. I have said that the abilities you possess are only shadows of your real strength, and that perception, which is inherently judgmental, was introduced only after the separation. No one has been sure of anything since.
Yes, now, perception is what happens when you give an evaluation to an event in the kingdom of heaven. When you describe it in your own words, and those words do not reflect what the movement of God is there, you're at work. A fellow employee walks by calmly. His whole stance conveys that he's not ill at ease. While everyone else is disturbed about some event that has occurred within the office politics, we'll say. So here we have a Christ who has walked past, and you say, I never have liked that guy. Look at him. Swaggering his peace, showing how uninvolved he is. I really don't like that guy. You see, that's a perception of a Christ, an unmoved Christ who's in his peace. And I'm going to say, for this example, that he knows better than to get upset. And so he's staying in his peace so that he can more effectively deal with what everyone else is reacting to. Someone else seems always to do the right thing and is always kind. A good person. And those around him think he's flaunting his goodness and they can't stand him. You see my point? A perception is a description you apply to something in the middle of the kingdom of heaven that doesn't illuminate the truth that it's something or someone in the middle of the kingdom of heaven.
So it illuminates your misperception, really.
What does?
It shows you your misperception. Well, it doesn't show it to you, but it demonstrates your misperception.
It demonstrates that you are perceiving rather than knowing. That you are seeing what you choose to believe rather than having the direct experience of what is really divinely going on.
Okay.
And so in this sense, perception means misperception. Continue.
I have also made it clear that the resurrection was the means for the return to knowledge, which was accomplished by the union of my will with the Father's.
And here, knowledge, as I've used the word, means the same thing as knowing with a capital K. Because when you have abandoned self-will to unite with the will of the Father, by desiring to know of the Father what truth is, then you have available to you the experience of knowing the truth, not having a perception of truth, but knowing it from the tips of your toes, from the ends of the universe. Continue.
We can now establish a distinction that will clarify some of our subsequent statements.
Since the separation, the words create and make have become confused. When you make something, you do so out of a specific sense of lack or need. Anything made for a specific purpose has no true generalizability. When you make something to fill a perceived lack, you are tacitly implying that you believe in separation.
Because, of course, when you're joined with the Father, it's impossible to experience anything such as lack.
The ego has invented many ingenious thought systems for this purpose. None of them is creative. Inventiveness is wasted effort, even in its most ingenious form. The highly specific nature of invention is not worthy of the abstract creativity of God's creations.
Now, just as a little tidbit of information, when you turned away from the Father, when you turned away from the altar and you became preoccupied with the form, the infinite form of creation, but minus the Father's perspective, and form seemed to be transformed from spirit into matter, and eternity seemed to be transformed into time and space, you found yourself, apparently, on the Earth, with a moon orbiting around it, and other planets orbiting around your sun, and all of this, from God's perspective, from a true perspective, is simply part of the infinitude of you. But having turned away from the altar, and spirit having been transformed into matter, and eternity into time and space, your infinitude seemed to be separate from you, all physical objects. And so ingenious inventiveness had to be developed to find a way to get to the moon. And additionally, in order to move yourself through space, you had to employ something called force. Rocket engines, but nevertheless, force. Enough force to be able to overcome the gravity that holds you on the Earth. When truly speaking, if you hadn't turned from the altar and spirit had not been turned into matter, apparently, and eternity had not been changed into time and space, all you would have had to do would be to shift your attention from Earth to Moon, and you would be there, because it's all in you. Earth, Moon, planets, stars, galaxies are all resident in the mind that you are, because mind is the ground of your being. The body is not the ground of your being. You are observing everything with your mind even now, while you think you are viewing it from your body. Do you see what I'm getting at? the minute spirit was translated into matter, you all became subject to what you subsequently decided were the laws of matter, which you call physics and call a science. But at this moment, none of you are bound by those laws because those laws are imaginary, and force is not needed to get from here to there, whether it's from home to work or from Earth to the moon. I bring this out so that you will not give as much credibility to the laws of physics and so that you might come to understand the power of mind, which involves no force whatsoever. It takes no energy to shift your attention from one idea to another, does it? Likewise, it takes no energy or force to be present, intimately present, with the surface of the moon, and then instantaneously present with the surface of the earth, because the only thing that has to shift is attention, not matter. Yes.
Right now in theaters, there's been a real concentration of movies around things like like Spider-Man, supernatural powers, the Hulk is coming out, Matrix, which shows Neo as not being bound by physical laws anymore. Is this, in the human psyche, is there a deep knowing of what our real nature is that gives rise to this kind of thinking?
Well, of course there is. But it's not deep in the human psyche, because the word human is only a definition that has been given to the divine one that is a Christ. So deep within you, the only one there is of you, you know the truth.
And so that's the fascination.
And the disowned part of you is called the Holy Spirit, which is always taking every opportunity it can to turn your current limited perception into a better perception, and thus turning every situation to your advantage. And so, yes, you are going to find more of these movies and more events occurring that will trigger the remembering, because the remembering is bringing forth the triggers.
So it becomes a spiral in momentum. As the memories bring about the triggers bring about more memory, etc.
Indeed, it's self-affirming. It's self-affirming with a capital S. Yes. It's none of it is magic at all, and none of it is supernatural. It's just the truth registering a little bit more openly. In a way, you could say that you are in a time when closet Christs are beginning to come out of the closet. Discomfort with what one truly is not as strong as it was. And a great many are finding the courage to embrace what they deeply know from what they deeply are, but have kept hidden from themselves. And, as I've been saying for the last few weeks, the call here is for those of you who are aware of this to make a choice for glorifying God by embodying God in the world, in words and in deeds. I'm saying, come out of the closet. Declare yourself. Okay.
Knowing, as we have already observed, does not lead to doing.
And why? Because knowing is the awareness that everything is already done. Not done in the past. When you know what God is being, and I'm using the word being as a verb, when one knows as a direct experience what God is being, one knows that there is nothing needing to be done to it. And if there's anything needing to be done, it is in this sense, that you stay on the leading edge of the wave of the movement of creation, so that as the, quote, "Behold, I make all things new," unquote, continues eternally, you are present for the fullness of what God is being, as the knowing of it. So that the experience of knowing is ever fresh. In this sense, knowledge can never be applied to the past. Knowledge cannot be acquired and saved. Knowledge is the direct now experience of the movement of creation that God is being and that you are inseparable from. Continue.
The confusion between your real creation and what you have made of yourself is so profound that it has become literally impossible for you to know anything.
And what makes it confusing is the vehemence with which you are committed to what you have made and your unwillingness to disown it. Your unwillingness to abandon your makerhood. The unwillingness to abandon the credit you think you deserve and have gotten for the skill with which you've made whatever was made. It's a self-love that stands in the way, and it is a love of a self that has existence only in your imagination. Continue.
Knowledge is always stable, and it is quite evident that you are not.
Continue.
Nevertheless, you are perfectly stable as God created you.
Nevertheless, you are perfectly stable as God created you. In other words, you recognize that you are experiencing instability, but it hasn't changed what you truly are. Your belief hasn't changed what God created right there and is being right there where you are. Therefore, in spite of the instability you're experiencing, you are perfectly stable as God created you, or as God is being you at this instant. Continue.
In this sense, when your behavior is unstable, you are disagreeing with God's idea of your creation.
Continue.
You can do this if you choose, but you would hardly want to do it if you were in your right mind.
Yes. Truth cannot deal with errors that you want. So if you want an error, you can do so if you choose. You have complete permission. But you would hardly want to do it if you were in your right mind. Oh, Daddy, won't you please make me do it? Won't you kick my butt and bring me into line? No. Each of you has to choose for your sanity yourself. Your insanity hasn't altered the truth about you in any way. But you've chosen to be willful, and you have to abandon the willfulness yourself. It's simple. Unfortunately, it means you can't be enticed back. You can't be coerced. You can be invited, but manipulation, no one of us who is awake will waste our time attempting to manipulate your mind and coerce you. Because if we do that, your egos will recognize the coercion and will turn the dynamic into its gain, and it will say, okay, I'll take 10 steps in this direction. But not without making a bargain with you. Or not without holding you responsible for any distress I might experience on the way. And so there's no willingness there. It just emphasizes the game playing and further establishes the ego dynamic. Nevertheless, if you want to be committed to an illusion, do it. Do it, sure. But you would hardly want to do it if you were in your right mind. Yes.
Can you help me to better distinguish when I am not listening? Is it just the experience of that subtle loss of peace?
Yes. Subtle and not so subtle.
Right.
But you can put a note on your refrigerator or around the house that just says, is it I or we?
Can you expand?
Meaning, at the moment that you look at this, at the note that says, "Is it I or we?" it will cause you to question whether or not, at that moment, you're engaged in whatever you're doing by yourself or in communion with your guide or the Holy Spirit. Is what is happening a joint activity, whether you're vacuuming or whether you're driving the car? Or are you apparently doing it all by yourself at the moment? That will tell you right away and will serve to give you a reminder throughout the day to remember to do it with your guide.
Is it just remembering to ask?
Just remembering to ask?
Knowing that you're actually listening. Is there an experience of it, or is it just the fact that you say, okay, I'm willing to do it together?
Well, let's put it this way. If you're listening and not hearing, the listening isn't fulfilled. If you are wanting not to be alone, and you are reaching out to the Holy Spirit or to your guide or to me, and you're not feeling the presence of anything but your everyday experience of yourself, then listening isn't fulfilled yet. When it's fulfilled, you know you're not alone, whether you're vacuuming or not. And you pay attention. You find that your movement is led. How you move back and forth. It could almost become a dance to you because you're not doing it alone. You are letting your guide be involved so that what you are doing is altered from the way you do it all by yourself. And there is a feeling of camaraderie, a conscious experience of someone being present with you. So make a little signs. Is it I or we? Just to remind you to join if you're not joined. Listening, be careful that you don't listen. You're doing the vacuuming and you're listening, you know, so that your attention is not just on what you're doing, but open to something else, and then just continue to do your vacuuming. You want to listen and hear. Listen and feel the response, and then stay in touch so that the connection is ongoing.
Because I'm sure I've felt that before, but I think I want to get a little bit more grounded in knowing the difference, knowing for sure when it is that I'm experiencing and when I'm wondering.
Well, when you feel loved, when you are having an experience of being loved, you know you're not alone. If you're not experiencing that right now, then joining is not occurring right now. You know the difference. Just be really honest with yourself.
Okay. So if I'm not hearing, just persist, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. I just want to repeat this. The highly specific nature of invention is not worthy of the abstract creativity of God's creations. So, be willing to abandon any commitment that you all have to being inventive, to being creative. Creative problem solving. That's a nice buzzword, isn't it? Creative problem solving. And are you any good at it? You're worse off if you think that you are than those who don't think that they are, because that means you think you've got some skill at being a creative, inventive problem solver. you have people attempting to creatively, ingeniously, and inventively find ways to manipulate the matter that your body is made up of, into health. And these are called drug companies. When the fact is that what will correct error from the bottom up is the recognition that you don't have a material body, that form, the form that you recognize as your body, is pure spirit. The substance of pure spirit is love, divine love, the Father's love. It's therefore not bound by laws of physics, inertia. That which calls for time in order for change to occur, and so on. And in abandoning the form that you recognize as your body to spirit, it becomes subject to instantaneous reconfiguration that doesn't require any conscious direction from you to become what it ought to be. The minute you release it from the agreed upon structures of the perception of substance as matter, it will spontaneously reconfigure to identify what it is, or you will find yourself no longer biased, experiencing a biased perception of what had been spirit all along. And that is not inventive or ingenious or creative as a personal accomplishment. Do you see what I'm saying? Healing, is not limited to the laws of physics. Arriving on the moon is not limited by the laws of physics. You mentioned Matrix, and in the first Matrix, one of the statements made to Neo was, "You think you're breathing air?" The sense of air being breathed was a concept that was being provided, and breathing air wasn't what was going on at all. Likewise, a material universe isn't what's going on, and it's not what you're in the middle of. It's all spirit, which is incapable of being sluggish, which is incapable of being limited in its movement, because the energy is constantly available to identify the ongoing movement of creation that is accomplished in the mind of God as the movement of ideas. That's what's going on. Okay, continue.
The fundamental question you continually ask yourself cannot properly be directed to yourself at all. You keep asking what it is you are. This implies that the answer is not only one you know, but is also one that it is up to you to supply. Yet, you cannot perceive yourself correctly. you have no image to be perceived. The word image is always perception related and not a part of knowledge. Images are symbolic and stand for something else. The idea of changing your image recognizes the power of perception, but also implies that there is nothing stable to know.
Yes. Have any of you ever run up against the boundary of your mind? Have you?
Yes.
Geographically, where was it?
Well, it was
four blocks. No, really. It was when I had a vision that totally didn't fit any of my mutually agreed upon concepts, and just, you know, the expression goes, it blew my mind. I had no way to explain it physically or in any other way that was not, for lack of a better word, supernatural.
Well, let me ask you this way. Is your mind rectangular? Is it cubic? Is it an oval?
Feels like a little dark box. I'm being evasive, but I understand what you mean.
Indeed. You are mind. And mind has no limits. Mind is, and always has been, boundaryless. That means there can only be one mind, doesn't it? You're not a what, you're a presence. The presence of mind. The presence of that in which all conscious experience is occurring infinitely. When you make a definition, you create an artificial boundary, an imagined boundary. And then when you confine your attention within that boundary, you seem to lose the infinite view, the infinite connection, you might say. But you only accomplish this by ignoring the rest, not by actually creating a boundary. The function of mind is to know. Let's continue.
Knowing is not open to interpretation. You may try to interpret meaning, but this is always open to error because it refers to the perception of meaning.
In other words, it refers to a definition of the word meaning rather than referring to that of which you're trying to find the meaning. Continue.
Such incongruities are the result of attempts to regard yourself as separated and unseparated at the same time. It is impossible to make so fundamental a confusion without increasing your overall confusion still further. Your mind may have become very ingenious, but as always happens, when method and content are separated, it is utilized in a futile attempt to escape from an inescapable impasse.
Yes. Every attempt you make to improve the human condition without arriving as though the human condition were real will always cause you to remain enmeshed in the human condition. Is that clear? So you're trying to do the impossible.
Why can't she step in front of a car? Why can't she step in front of a car?
Mark, why can't she step in front of a car? You tell me.
You met her at the place where meaningful and not meaningful come together, and by her listening to you, you helped her out of her misperception, and you're in charge of cars and time and all of that, and I put all that together from reading this book, and it's quite confusing.
I am not in charge of cars.
This is where instability reigns. It always is based on need. Need. Needs met.
I instead of we. I see that.
The need to know needs met. Once we keep grounded in that, we won't be surmising and supposing.
I cannot be in charge of myself, much less the cars.
What about time and space? I mean, it says you're in charge of time and space and in charge of everything that has no meaning. Well, I have this documented too.
Would you accept that? Would you accept such a job? To be in charge of all that is meaningless.
And to include time and space in that category.
The hours might be good.
I cannot override free will. I am not in charge of this. Dastardly miscreation that each of you has miscreated and made commitment to. Because what you have created doesn't exist. But I can meet you, my brother, as my brother, and be the presence of love with you that causes you to remember what it feels like not to be alone, and thus distract you from what is meaningless that has been binding you. And you know, because love is love, as you and I walk you out of your misperceptions, I counsel you wisely not to stop breathing, even though you think you're breathing air. Because until you know that there is no air to breathe and you don't need it, and what is happening called breathing air is something other than what you believe it is. My telling you to stop breathing would create for you a very frightening experience, because there would have been no provision of understanding of what's really going on and called, quote, breathing air, unquote. And so I will tell you how not to frighten yourself any more than you are already frightened because a long time ago you turned away from the altar. And I will bring you back to the altar. I will refresh you with the truth about you in a way that reduces your fear and allows you to find a courage you didn't know you had, a courage that doesn't require force to move through, to move with. Forget about being in charge of the cars and being in charge of all that is meaningless. I accepted the job. But that's not where my work is. My work is with you, with each of you, as brothers and sisters, as divine beings, as divine ones, as the presence of God. And as long as you believe with all your might that being in front of an oncoming car will kill you, I will advise you not to step in front of one. And when you finally understand why you can't be harmed, then you can walk wherever you want, in front of cars, horses, rabid dogs, off the edge of buildings, into a propeller, whatever.
Not as an I. I mean, that's the doorway is the I and the we.
That is
so
for sure.
We all the way home.
Indeed.
I got that.
Indeed. Continue.
Ingenuity is totally divorced from knowledge because knowledge does not require ingenuity. Ingenious thinking is not the truth that shall set you free, but you are free of the need to engage in it when you are willing to let it go.
You should all feel greatly relieved because there's no effort called for. There's no effort called for in coming back into your right mind. Ingenious thinking is effortful. But it's not the truth that shall set you free. And I'm going to say you will be free of the need to engage in it when you're willing to let it go. That's all. You just have to be willing to let it go. Let go of the apparently satisfying exercise of ingenious creativity where you, not we, where you can make a difference in the world. Any difference you make in the world as a result of ingenuity will will be nothing more than a variation on an age-old theme that has for ages, constituted the re-establishment of and the continuation of the human condition. When you're willing to abandon the need to be ingenious, and you abandon the I attitude, adopting the we attitude, as an actual experience of joining, there will be wonders that you can't imagine. But they won't be the result of ingenuity. They will be the result of your no longer blocking the movement of God that embodies the meaning of the words, "Behold, I make all things new." And you have a week to let that sink in. I am enjoying myself.
You're enjoying yourself too.
I am enjoying the experience of you hearing me. I'm enjoying the experience of your hearing me and your knowing that you're hearing me. Many times you hear me, but you don't know that we connected. I am enjoying the conscious camaraderie, the conscious connection with you. Not with you and you and you and you and you. I am enjoying, the you isn't the most important part of what I'm saying. I am enjoying the conscious connection. Because you are consciousness. You are mind. I am enjoying the connection that is the real connection. That has nothing to do with personal little I's. Capital letter I. Egos. Little. You, 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 you. You see what I'm saying? I am a universal smile at this moment. And I look forward to every single moment with you between now and next weekend, as well as next Sunday. We will call it a day.